Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. America's retail industry has been among the hardest hit during the COVID economic crash. And as several states across the country begin to open up, it remains an open question as to whether local stores and even some famous brand names will be able to keep the lights on, not to mention make a profit. How will we shop in a post-pandemic world? Who are the winners and losers here? This hour on Point, how the coronavirus is reshaping retail. With me first from New York City, Nathaniel Meyerson. He's a retail reporter for CNN Business. Nathaniel, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you again.
Great to be here, Jane. Thanks so much.
Well, so in many ways, the retail industry was suffering before the pandemic. How would you describe what's happening to U.S. retail because of COVID-19?
That's exactly right. So before the crisis, you had a split between strong retailers like Amazon, Walmart, Costco, Target, and weaker companies like Macy's, J. Crew, JCPenney, Neiman Marcus. And what's happening now is that the stronger players are getting even stronger, becoming even more dominant. And the weaker ones that have had to close stores during the crisis have really been devastated. So we're seeing a real split between the winners and the losers. And this crisis has really reshaped the industry.
And what about the local businesses, the mom and pop in the corner, city center? How are they doing? Do we know? Do we have numbers?
Well, I think that, there's a split there. I've done some reporting on rural grocery stores, which were under a lot of pressure from Walmart and from dollar stores, Dollar General. Some of those chains are seeing, or those stores are seeing a resurgence because customers, they don't want to travel to a bigger store. They want to kind of get in and out. So I think that, right now, some independent operators are doing pretty well. But you also have independent retailers where this could really, the crisis could really be what tips them over the edge.
More than one-fifth of Americans are employed in the retail industry and the hospitality industry in this country. Stores, restaurants, tourism, entertainment. Give us a full sense of the number of people that are impacted here and the toll this is taking.
Well, as you pointed out those numbers, retailers have had to lay off hundreds of thousands of people. They've had to furlough employees. I think that's going to accelerate. A few of these companies that I mentioned, J. Crew, Neiman Marcus, JCPenney, these companies are now on bankruptcy watch. So they're going to downsize. They're going to have to lay folks off. At the same time, you have companies like Walmart and Amazon racing to hire people, hiring hundreds of thousands of workers because of all the demand. So I think that you're going to see more layoffs in the department store sector, but you're also going to see some hiring from these competitors that are doing really well.
There was big news this week that the biggest mall operator in the country, the Simon Property Group, plans to reopen 49 malls across the country this weekend. Tell us about that. This will be a big test, Nathaniel. What are you watching for?
That's exactly right. It's, some people think that they may have jumped the gun a little bit early. The mall environment is going to look so different. Malls were already struggling because of online shopping, and as well because of discount retailers like TJ Maxx and Ross Stores. And this mall environment is, I mean, it's going to be incredibly unusual. Simon, you know, we'll have social distancing markers everywhere, plexiglass at cashiers, play areas will be shut down, kind of the common areas of the mall will be shut down. So I think it's kind of the first big test of this new retail environment that we're in. You know, these malls and department stores, you know, they play up the experience at these places. And, you know, are people going to be looking to be roaming around stores right now, browsing aisles, trying on clothes, you know, leisurely activities? I think, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty. And we're going to see how it plays out.
It will be a new experience for consumers, for shoppers, that's for sure. Nathaniel, from your reporting, what are retailers doing to meet this moment in terms of moving online, trying to compete online? What are you seeing?
So I'm what's really interesting right now is to watch what's going on in online grocery shopping. So online grocery shopping has taken a while to develop in this country. You know, there are only about 5% of sales, grocery sales, come online. Folks like to go to the grocery store, you know, see the produce, see what type of meat they're buying. But during this crisis, you've seen all of this demand go online, and that's why it's so hard to get a reservation on FreshDirect or through Instacart. So I think it's really interesting to watch what's going on with online grocery shopping, because that is quickly moving online, and that's going to have big implications for, especially for smaller grocery stores that don't have the capabilities to invest. I mean, it's very costly,
right,
to invest in building out online grocery. So that could, you know, I think there could be some bankruptcies in the grocery sector as well.
Nathaniel Meyerson, retail reporter for CNN Business. Really appreciate the information and your reporting today, Nathaniel. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
We're discussing the future of retail shopping after COVID and during COVID-19. Listeners, do you own a local retail store? How are you thinking ahead? How bad is it for you right now? Let me bring another voice into the conversation now from Toronto, Doug Stevens. He is founder and president of Retail Profit, an advisory firm focused on the future of retail and consumerism. He previously spent 20 years as a retail executive. Doug Stevens, great to have you. Welcome to On Point.
Thank you very much, Jane. Great to be here.
So tell us why this moment is so unique in the history of retail, even more so than, say, 9/11.
It really and truly is. And, you know, I think that the important thing to understand is the complexity of the crisis that we find ourselves in. We really have two situations, both of which could be extremely prolonged. On the front end, of course, we have the health crisis, which we're all dealing with now, and we're seeing different levels of social distancing. We're seeing mitigation efforts going on within communities, so we're struggling against that. But on the tail end of this, we also suspect that this is going to lead to a really grave financial and economic situation, which opens up an entirely new chapter in this crisis. So, you know, you have the kind of the shock of 9/11, because this did come quickly when it arrived, combined with the length of the Great Depression, and then you throw in this serious medical issue as well into the mix. So it really and truly is an unprecedented crisis.
So you have two categories, right? Small and mid-size retail businesses, and then you have the behemoths, the Amazon and the Walmarts, and they are sitting on mountains of cash, right? And that makes them largely immune to the funding squeezes that the little guys have got right now. You know, you hear Nathaniel talking about some of these smaller companies that, you know, it's expensive to go online. It's expensive to bill out online. I mean, a lot of these details that, you know, you don't often think about, but now they have to think about. How has the rule book changed for these retailers to win customers? What do they have to do differently now?
Well, in the short term, they're going to have to show almost a single-minded concern for their customers and their employees. And we've seen varying degrees of that. You know, we've seen some companies called out for poor treatment of frontline workers. We've seen other companies that have been hailed for the respect that they've treated their frontline employees with. But it really is, it's a single-minded focus on the customer's well-being, doing whatever you can to help. In the longer term, I think that the important thing for companies is to begin to think now about what that future landscape is likely to look like. And Nathaniel mentioned that, you know, we're seeing consumer behavior, at least in the grocery sector right now, changing in a very fundamental way. What I would encourage retailers to do is let's look for those deeper changes that could take place. Are people going to question the way they work and where they work from? Could the nature of education change? Could we see university campuses holding far fewer students? You know, so will this crisis lead to a greater and broader rethink of society and the way we live in general, and then what kinds of changes will that propagate in the retail landscape?
And what do you think is the biggest one, quickly, before the break?
Well, you know, it's a good question. And I think so much of the retail landscape we see around us today is predicated on the idea that thousands, tens of thousands, perhaps millions of consumers each day commute into cities. And so the structure of retail, the locations that retailers have chosen, the access and egress of those locations are all sort of predicated on this flood of consumers to work each day. And that could be the big change.
We are discussing the future of retail shopping during COVID-19. Doug Stevens is my guest, the founder of Retail Profit, an advisory firm focused on the future of retail and consumerism. We have a couple of other voices to join the conversation after this break. Stick with us. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're discussing the impact of the coronavirus, how it's impacting retail shopping possibly for years to come. Here's a small business owner, Alex Batista, co-owner of Delilicious. That's a delicatessen in the Queensboro of New York. Had to lay off about half of the store employees this month.
A lot of people used to come in, you know, the workers from the hardware store, plumbing supplies, all the offices around here, they used to come in for lunchtime and breakfast, and, like, you don't get that kind of crowd no more. 3 or 4 months of this, and that's it. We had to shut down.
3 or 4 months of this, and I have to shut down. So many people living that experience. With us from Toronto, Doug Stevens. He is founder and president of Retail Profit, an advisory firm focused on the future of retail and consumerism. He previously spent 20 years as a retail executive. And joining me now from Philadelphia, Barbara Kahn. She's a professor of marketing at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School and author of the 2018 book, The Shopping Revolution, How Successful Retailers Win Customers in an Era of Endless Disruption. Barbara Kahn, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Yeah, nice to be here. Thank you, Jane.
You hear Alex Batista there, the deli owner, and, you know, your heart breaks. I drive through our little town center where I live, and, you know, a lot of these mom-and-pop shops
You know, it's just heartbreaking. It's very possible some of them just won't make it. Many of them won't. How do you see this moment, Barbara Kahn?
Well, yeah, it's a pivotal moment in retail for sure. And I agree, you have to think about it in not only today, but tomorrow and in the future. As Doug was saying, I agree. You have to think, you have to focus on the consumer and figure out where the trend is, what how the business is going to change to figure out whether you're going to be a winner or a loser. So I kind of think of the way you kind of cope with what's going on in three buckets. The first bucket is, what do you have to do today to survive? So right now we're in a world where there are certain constraints, essential versus non-essential retail, curbside pickup versus going into the store. There's certain behavior that's very tactical, and you have to respond to the environment now. The second way to think about it, though, and figuring out who's going to win or lose is, when we get through this period right now, how will the landscape change? What are changes that if you don't do, you won't be able to survive? So for an example of something like that, I believe that the purchase process will change. I think that people will get to trying to get to more of a frictionless purchase process, more along the lines of what Amazon Go has, because people are going to be afraid of touching cash.
Yeah, right.
So we have the technology to get there. So I think you'll see an acceleration to that kind of thing. It's already happening in China. So there's precedent for this kind of behavior. So that's an example of something that when we get out of the immediate concerns of COVID right now, you'll see a difference in the landscape. And then there are the bigger trends that Doug was talking about, which I also agree with. You have to think through, how will the world change now that people have recognized that they can work at home? And this is what he was talking about. Will we see firms be more flexible about working hours? Will it be that people can work at home for part of the time and commute another time? And how will some of those very big changes change retailing in the future? Another trend, so he mentioned the commuting trend, but another trend is bringing more people online. So how many people, I don't think that we're going to see 100% of retail online. I just think there's still a real value to physical retail. But there's no doubt that some people who never purchased online have experienced the convenience of that. And how will that trend change retailing in the future?
So that's an interesting point. Just playing off that last point, your third bucket, it seems that consumers have adopted some short-term behaviors during the pandemic that could very well become permanent in a good way and in a bad way. Can you give us an example of that, Barbara Kahn?
Yeah, right. Like, I think that. So I think what you saw, and some of your previous guests were talking about the winners and the losers, and the winners are getting stronger and the losers are unfortunately getting weaker in some case. But one thing that characterizes the difference between the winners and losers, I believe, is the emphasis on omni-channel retail. So people no longer think of retail as online, offline, but they think of it as a seamless integration between the two. Now, from a customer point of view, that's just like making sure what you see online matches what's in the store. But from a retailer point of view, that's lining up all your supply chain, your logistics, and all these other things. And the bigger chains like Walmart and Amazon, they're much better integrated between online and offline. The smaller retailers and the retailers that are struggling are not as integrated. And that is going to be a trend going forward that I think you'll see separating the winners and the losers.
Well, that's interesting. And Doug Stevens, again, it's expensive to get online. It takes a lot of money for these small businesses to get there. And especially now, they just don't have it, Doug Stevens.
No, they don't. In fact, there was a recent piece of research that was done that suggested that 25% of independent retailers in the United States maintain that they can't prolong through this crisis for more than 2 months with no business. So, you know, when you think about how that could potentially change the complexion of the retail landscape on a local level, it's astonishing. And we can't forget, too, that these small retailers, you know, are responsible for about 40% of revenue in the retail industry as well, and massive amounts of job creation. So, not to mention just the sheer uniqueness and creativity of many of the concepts that they come up with. So, it's really important, I think, that we backstop these businesses. You know, what we see going on right now is a lot of bailing out of cruise ship lines and airlines and a lot of legacy industries, but The truth is, what we should be backstopping are many of these vitally important grassroots retailers at the local level.
Let's hear from one of those local retailers, Matthew in Dover, Delaware. Hi, Matthew. Welcome to On Point.
Hi there.
Hi.
I was basically calling because we have actually, we're actually flat to last year. Basically, pet food and pet supply is essential in Delaware, but we did not find it something that we could do as far as grooming was safe for our groomers. So we did lay them off.
However, so you're a pet boutique, Matthew, and groomer company?
Exactly.
Okay.
Pet supply, high-end pet food.
And how have you adapted during COVID, Matthew?
Basically, we've bulked up our online, and we have seen maybe a 20% drop to last year, but we are still going strong as far as online.
Mm-hmm. So you've tried to make the shift, Matthew. Thank you very much for the call, Doug Stevens. There's a pet boutique owner who's doing his best, trying to take it online, but still he's down 20%.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is not, he's not alone. We've certainly not seen even companies that are very, very capable with online commerce. Adidas, for example, reported their results during this crisis, and even they have not been able to bridge the gap with online. And so, you know, in a way, it's sort of, you know, what we're learning from this crisis is much in the way that it attacks individuals with pre-existing conditions. It has also attacked retailers with pre-existing conditions. So if you were a business that was not online capable, if you were too reliant on brick and mortar retail, if you were carrying too much debt, or if you didn't have enough cash in the bank, COVID-19 really rooted out those vulnerabilities and insecurities. So, I think in the aftermath of this, we're going to see, as Barbara just pointed out, another revolution of retailers now rushing to build those online capabilities and become that more omnichannel capable business.
Well, Barbara Kahn, the difference between recession and recovery, as you well know, is consumer confidence. And consumers are not at all confident right now. New GDP numbers out this week show the economy shrinking nearly 5% in the first quarter of 2020. And in the second quarter, which we're in now, it's looking to be much, much worse. This is the fastest drop in consumer spending, consumer confidence that we've seen in decades. What do you make of these numbers, and how do you get that consumer confidence back up, the ability or the willingness of the consumer to go out and to spend?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. You said many things there, you know, that you have to unpack. But one of obviously is the consumer confidence. And the other is, what will shopping look like in the future? So I do not believe that we're going to go to 100% online when people can get out and about. I firmly believe it's going to be an omni-channel experience, which is part understanding what people want to purchase or browse online and what they want to do in the physical store. And if you can build the physical store so that people are excited about it and want to go into it, you can maybe increase consumer confidence and get people spending more. So what would a new store look like, or a store post-COVID look like? I think one of the things that is going to be very important is that the consumer is going to have to feel it's safe to go into that store. Mm. We're going to have to recognize that the environment has changed. You're seeing it now with some of the grocery stores that are opening. So what does that mean? People are going to, at least in the near future, they're probably going to be wearing masks. They're probably going to practice social distance. They're probably going to limit the number of people that can go into a store. But as people get used to that environment, they may start to gravitate towards these physical stores. I think people are craving social interaction. They want to get out. They don't like the sameness of sitting at home and looking at their computer screen. They really want to interact. So if the stores can respond and respond quickly enough, I think as we slowly get used to this new environment, we can start to increase consumer confidence as they feel safe and they feel better about the outside environment.
That's interesting. Doug Stevens, it's one thing for the physical store to be safe. I'm thinking of mall stores, you know, like Macy's and JCPenney's, stores that have been struggling for a long time and that have huge spaces with loads of seasonal inventory that will be out of season by the time they reopen. I mean, there are so many issues to consider here, Doug.
There absolutely are, Jane. And I mean, this is what makes it such a complex sort of Rubik's Cube of a problem, because the fact of the matter is, if we're being completely honest about it, until there is a vaccine, and until that vaccine is proven, until it's widely available, until most of the population has been inoculated, we will not see any return to quote unquote normal in the retail sector at all. And what that means for many retailers is that they will be operating against drastically reduced revenues. We've seen stores open in Germany just in the last couple of weeks. Reports that I've gotten, just anecdotal reports on the ground, are that those stores are currently registering about 30% of the revenue that would be normal at this time. Now, the problem with that is that your operating expenses as a retailer can only go to a certain threshold. You can't go below a certain minimum operating cost per store. And so if your revenues are not even paying those operating costs, the truth is it may be more quote unquote profitable for some businesses to simply keep those doors closed.
Interesting. Let's go back to the phones to Boston. Handy is on the line. Hi, Handy. Welcome to On Point.
Hi there.
Hi.
I own two women's clothing stores, consignment shops here in Boston, and we've been mandated to close by the city. And how I've kind of gotten around that is we have one girl at each store selling on social media. Luckily for us, we had built a following beforehand where we have the ability to sell a little bit. And sales have been down significantly, of course, down 70%. But I just feel so lucky that I have a way of selling. And now we're moving to selling on a website as well. And I think that the retailers that survive this are the ones that pivot. And so for us, it's just about kind of moving more online and kind of changing what we do and going from there.
Handy, thank you. It's a really good point. Barbara Kahn, you know, we're talking about these big box stores, big retailers, department stores. There's Handy running her clothing store, her little clothing store. What are some examples of small business owners that are doing it right now? Handy's talking about pivoting, being quick on your feet, knowing what you have to do next. What are small businesses doing right? Give us some examples, Barbara.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting thing. So definitely having some kind of online presence to bring customers into the store or allow for this. There's some of them that I know in Texas, some of the small stores that have opened have started doing curbside delivery so that they have this loyal, because a lot of people recognize the importance of the small retailers in building quality of life in towns and cities. So I think there is some natural loyalty. People want to support their local business. You certainly saw it a little bit with restaurants and things like that. And so if you can give people an opportunity to show support, like your caller just suggested there through their social media community, or if you can build this curbside delivery, I think people will do what they can. But it's definitely going to be very difficult because, as Doug pointed out, your costs are not changing and your revenues are significantly changing.
Right.
So they're just going to have to tolerate some hardship in the future. But hopefully in the future we'll be able to adapt and, you know, things will come out okay.
Handy, thanks so much for the call, Handy. You know, Doug, you mentioned this earlier, but communication. I'm thinking about that in the context of a small business. I'm thinking about in the context of Handy's clothing store and of our last caller's pet salon. You know, communicating with the public and with your employees is so important right now. Tell us why.
It's so important because this crisis is so grounded emotionally. You know, people are fearful. This is not just a matter of the potential for job loss or for economic hardship, but it's underpinned by, you know, the threat of illness or death or losing family members. And so it's particularly important that leaders, whether they be of small businesses or large businesses, be proactively communicating with both their employees and their customers, and not to necessarily say, I have all the answers or we know how this is all going to turn out, but to show an attentiveness, to what is happening. What are the new guidelines? Let us demonstrate to you how we're observing them. Showing concern and care for your employees by making sure that they have the proper equipment, that they feel confident that guidelines are being observed for their protection as well. So if we can allay those fears, and Barbara pointed that out very, very accurately, that you know this is fundamentally about fear. If we can allay some of those fears and show that ultimately our first priority is the health and safety of the people that are important, being our consumers and our employees, that will go a long way, not just for the present, but when we do come to the end of the tunnel here and consumers do return to businesses, it's safe to assume they will remember the ones that they felt were concerned about them.
The ones who had empathy. We're discussing the U.S. retail industry, listeners, and shopping in light of the coronavirus, which companies are best positioned to succeed after the pandemic. A great guest lineup here, Doug Stevens, founder of Retail Profit, Barbara Kahn, professor at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School. We've got more listeners, more topics to get to after the break. Stick with us. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. On Monday, we will be speaking with NASA astronaut Christina Cook, who returned to Earth in February. We'll be speaking with her about her experience in space and her return to a very significantly different Earth than the one she left. We'd love to hear your stories. What is it about space that captures your imagination, especially at a time when you're trapped in your house? Tell us your story, 617-353-0683. 617-353-0683. Today, we're discussing how the coronavirus is reshaping our shopping habits and the retail companies, big and small, how they're surviving and looking to the future. Let's hear from a couple of the little guys here. Here's Sangeeta Lakhani, owner of The Table, a restaurant in Columbus, Ohio, with a closely knit staff that she compares to a family.
I've had people that have worked here for 7 years, you know, like, these are my kids. Like, I feel responsibility towards them like I do my own children. These kids aren't sitting on savings accounts. Like, these are hourly workers. They're tipped workers. As a parent, to not know how to help your children through something like this, it's heartbreaking, you know? I don't know how to help them.
And here's Danny Cairns, store manager at Cram Fashion, a local Chicago fashion boutique, describing the importance of the in-store experience, especially now, to the company's bottom line.
We rely on the customers coming into the store. And when everything happened with the COVID-19, we made the decision to close. So without customers coming into the store, we have no income. So the only way for us to generate some income, some steady income, was to set up an online store.
Well, we're speaking to Doug Stevens this hour, founder and president of Retail Profit, an advisory firm focusing on the future of retail and consumerism, and Barbara Kahn, professor of marketing at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School. Let me bring another voice into the conversation now from Chicago, Neela Montgomery. She's CEO of Crate & Barrel, a retail company with stores across the world specializing in furniture and home decor. Neela Montgomery, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Hi, Jane. Thank you.
So tell us first how you've seen consumer habits changing during the pandemic. What have you seen your customers do?
Well, it's been remarkable. We closed all our stores nationwide on the 16th of March. And since then, we've seen a remarkable shift to our online business. Our online business was already 51% of our sales and has been trading up maybe 80 to 100% since then. And so we're very fortunate that we've been able to implement social distancing and safe practices for our DC workers. But effectively, as of the 1st of April, there was an initial kind of dip as everyone got used to working from home. We have been trading in our online business as if it's peak. We've shipped over 500,000 packages. And really, that's been driven by a few things. We've seen a big shift into kitchen with everybody being at home and re-equipping their kitchen and cooking, especially baking. Mm-hmm. We've seen a very big rise in kids and kids products, not just desks as people were setting up for homeschooling, mm-hmm. but just making their environments for their children as pleasant as possible and as inspirational as possible. And in recent weeks, we've seen a lot of movement in the outdoor space as people get ready for what they hope will be better weather and, are, again, trying to make those spaces in their homes as attractive and comfortable and inspirational as possible.
So we've been talking about recreating the in-store experience online, Neela, and I'm curious as CEO, you know, without taking away the joy and the wonder of shopping, walking through a store, touching the products, talking to a salesperson. I mean, how do you do that?
Well, we've been working on that, if I'm honest, on this kind of omnichannel experience for the last couple of years, and we've been introducing more and more of these kind of online and virtual tools. So starting with, you know, we do virtual consultations for people in their homes. We were doing those anyway from our stores. Now we're doing them from our call center associates who are also working from home. We have a lot of tools that allow you to configure 3D spaces, take photos and upload them and kind of have design consultations that way or see how a rug looks through augmented reality in your space. So we've been working a lot on those kind of things anyway, but I think the other piece of kind of, aside from just the pure shopping experience, is just how we're engaging socially with people. Mm. Social media, we were already very invested in and doing a lot there, but it's become so much more important in the last 6 weeks with people wanting to share their own content. We've been sharing a lot more recipes and cooks. Bill Kim, who is the chef in our restaurant, he's been cooking from home, and there's been great response. So you've just got to create much more of that conversation with your customers.
COVID-19 has devastated traditional retail, to put it mildly. I mean, just look at any, by any measure, any number, and it's real tough, really tough. What do you see looking forward? Are you worried? Are you concerned, not just for yourself, but for the industry more broadly speaking?
I do think that malls will see some fairly big changes. And, you know, we are predominantly a mall-based retailer. And so we recognize that the patterns of traffic will change. I think we expect there to be less traffic in those malls. But to be honest, I mean, mall traffic was declining anyway and has been for the last 3 to 4 years. It will accelerate that trend. And so what it will require us to do, which we were working on anyway, but we'll now really need to accelerate, is this whole piece around conversion. You have to ensure that every visit to your store is a gift and that you're converting in the best way possible, offering the best experience and the best service you can. And so, you know, yesterday was a real moment for us in that we reopened 26 of our stores for curbside, and our associates wearing masks, and it's going to be a different experience. But we still need to make it as rich and as good a touch point as we can for every customer who enters.
Neela Montgomery, CEO of Crate & Barrel, a retail company with stores across the world, and many of which are opening now. Neela, good luck to you, and thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Barbara Kahn, Neela said something there I thought was very interesting. Moving forward, every visit to your store is a gift. And I presume that no matter how large or small your company is, your store is, that is very true moving forward, Barbara.
Yeah, and I think what she spoke to is exactly what I was talking about, is reinventing retail to be an omni-channel experience. So she's doing a lot of the conversation online. A lot, there's some really interesting new things going on with some of the innovative researchers. She was talking about augmented reality and visual search, social media, getting all your technology to work together to create an amazing customer experience. But part of the customer experience will be what happens in the physical store. The more sophisticated retailers will have big data where they can see the consumer from 360 degrees all around, everything they're doing online, in social media, and then in the physical store when they get into that physical store, so that you can take advantage of those opportunities to build conversion by customizing and personalizing the customer experience for each consumer. That is very sophisticated retailing, and I think that is the way we are going, especially with the big chains like Crate and Barrel.
But I'm going to interrupt there because it is sophisticated and big data and social media and all this online, which is well and good for the big companies, but I keep coming back to the little
that's
guys.
That's a small one. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
So let me just say, but what can a small person do? They have a different advantage. They are local. They are personal. They have personal relationships with their customers. And one of your callers came in and said, we were very lucky. I don't know if it was lucky or smart, but she said they already had that relationship through social media. They already had that conversation. So I think there is a route forward for the local retailers who understand that they're providing not just a transaction, but a total customer experience.
Let's go to Ree in Scituate, Massachusetts. Hi, Ree. You're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Hi there. Thank you.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
I have a online shop on Etsy. I'm an artist. And I have been doing, I would say my sales are up 60%.
You're up. Your business is up.
I am so up. I have not stopped. Not one day. I have not had one day off.
What do you think you're doing right there, Ree?
Well, I do have a great customer base, and they are buying from me, you know, in multiple orders. When this first hit, I had had to lay off my girl that does my framing. Because I didn't have any money to pay her. And I would say 2 weeks she was off, and we just got slammed. I had to rehire her. Hmm. Plus, I have another employee to help me with the painting, and it's been incredible.
Well, good
it's
for you, Ree. I have to say, I think you're the exception, but I am delighted to hear it. A bit of good news, and we'll take it. Thank you so much for calling. Let's get George in here in Lawrence, Massachusetts. Hi, George. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Hello. I'm well. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I am a photographer, filmmaker. I have already online since 2014, being a photographer in those times where Facebook and Instagram can take your work, use it for free without returning anything to you, was already pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
Just imagine now that you have a pop-and-pop store where you serve family as in a local setting, and they can longer go to your place. Photographers don't have the privilege
right.
to work from home.
Right. It's true, George. And I think a lot of people feel that way, Barbara Kahn. You know, you can't work. You can't get out. You can't work from home. I mean, a lot of people are in a vice.
Yeah, I mean, so your last caller, she was in the right place at the right time. When you're staying home, you're doing a lot more crafts or whatever it is that she's selling. But just as many people who are benefiting, I'm sure there are way more that are not because of this need to physical experience. Like you're seeing a big down in weddings, for example. Photography is related to weddings and any or hairdressers or anything where you need actually the customer experience. There's no going around that. So there's no way those businesses are going to come back until we can start engaging in the ways we used to. So some of the question might be, what can you do in the meantime before we can get that to happen? And I think the idea of creating a customer base, creating a conversation, and maybe figuring out how to pivot. What else can you interact with people on besides just what you've historically done? You know, like some of the opportunity you've seen in these masks, as new opportunities come, the firms that can pivot quickly and create product to meet the needs of this new reality, they're the ones who are going to do well. So there are misfortunes if you're in the wrong place for the new environment, but those companies that can pay attention to what the customer needs are, pay attention to customer experience right now, and be there with what they need, they're going to be the winners.
They're the winners. Doug Stevens, what would you add to that?
Well, you know what? I mean, I think that we have in the retail industry operated against a pretty fundamental equation for, I'm going to say, at least the last 10 years. And the equation has simply been, as a business, you can be successful by doing one of two things. You can either sell something that no one else sells, or, and I should note that that's becoming increasingly difficult in a globalized economy, or you can sell what you sell in a way that no one else does. And that comes down to your particular brand of service, your particular trademark level of customer experience, and really wrapping your customer up in that experience. These are going to be difficult times, especially, you know, your last caller is in a very difficult position. But I would only add that we also have to look at the medical side of this as well. If we can get to a place where we have a reliable antibody test and we're able then to tell our stylist or our spa technician that we, you know, we either have the antibody or we don't, that at least can open up different parts of this economy and hopefully, you know, alleviate some of the pressure on these service providers as well.
So I've got about a minute left here for each of you to answer. Take us out here by telling us, after this conversation, such great information here, what's the one thing you want retailers to know and the one thing you want customers to know in this moment, looking forward, hopefully out of COVID-19 sooner rather than later? Doug Stevens, you first.
So, you know, I'm in the process of writing a new book about this pandemic and its impact on retail. And through the research, you know, you do have to look back at past crises. And one of those obvious crises is the 1918 pandemic. And so if I want to leave us with an optimistic thought, let's consider this. The 1918 pandemic, which lasted through 1918 and 19, was by far much, much more sinister in terms of the number of lives lost and the damage done. However, we have to appreciate that that led to the Roaring Twenties. And so these fears will allay. Consumers will get beyond this. We hope in the interim that we can capture enough support from government, from the banking sector, to keep these merchants alive, keep those jobs in play, and let's get through the medical crisis and get back to what we hope will be the Roaring 2020s.
Roaring 2020s. Barbara Kahn, you get the last word in a minute.
Thank you. I too am writing a new book on it, and I have a slightly different perspective. I think the way you're going to win on this is recognizing the principle of customer value. You have to give customers what they need. And in a new world, you have to figure out how these needs are changing. And then you have to do it better than the competition. And those retailers who can deliver customer value better than the competition are going to continue to be the winners.
Well, I'm going to hold on to the Roaring 2020s. That's my headline from this hour. And great information, great conversation from both of you. Doug Stevens, founder of Retail Profit, an advisory firm focused on the future of retail and consumerism, author of The Retail Revival, Reimagining Business for the New Age of Consumerism. Doug Stevens, thank you so much.
My pleasure indeed. Thank you.
And Barbara Kahn, professor of marketing at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School, author of The Shopping Revolution, How Successful Retailers Win Customers in an Era of Endless Disruption. Barbara Kahn, great to have you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And listeners, as always, thanks to you. Have a good weekend. Be safe. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
Mm-hmm. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices. And they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons. And there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.